Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the newest episode of the Thinking Jew podcast, where we dive deep into Torah and Judaism, always uncovering new layers of depth we did not realize was there beforehand. I'm your host, Rabbi Moshe Siegel from Richardson, Texas, and as always, I would love to hear from you. Feel free to reach out with any questions, comments, future topic requests. You can always reach me at thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com. So many of you may not know this about me, but before I actually joined YJC and started the Young Jewish Community in Richardson, Texas, I used to actually give medical ethics classes to doctors. And a few years back, it was during the Ebola outbreak, I gave a class to the doctors about quarantine in Halacha. As there were a few instances then of nurses and doctors that came back from West Africa, the government was forcing them then into a 21-day quarantine upon their return. Little did we know then that quarantine was not going to be a question of a few individuals, if you remember the names, Dr. Spencer, Casey Hickox, but rather a common occurrence across all of our lives. I currently actually have three of my kids home from school quarantining as kids in their classes had tested positive. So I figured that this would really be a great time to review the concept of quarantine in Halacha and try to discover the Torah perspective on this very timely topic. An interesting point to kind of start with in the general concept, really, of Jewish medical ethics is that that phrase, Jewish medical ethics, was actually first used in the 1970s by Sir Dr. Emanuel Jacobovitz, and that's because historically it was always called Jewish medical halacha, meaning as Jews, everything is really a question of what does Hashem want from us? What does God want from me? That's what halacha teaches us, how to walk with God throughout our lives. So although we like to debate these as ethical dilemmas, in truth, these are really basic questions of halacha, the same way we ask a question of, you know, what does God want for me to do in terms of observance of Shabbos or the laws of kosher, honesty in business, not gossiping. The area of what is my requirement within the world of medical halacha is really just a basic question, no different than any other question we ask in Jewish law. So if I were to ask you, what's the basic ethical question of quarantine? How would you phrase it? I think most of us would say something along the lines of, is it morally or ethically correct to limit the rights of a person who was exposed to someone with COVID for the betterment of society, despite the fact that right now they're not displaying any symptoms and they may have even tested negative, but they're within the period that they could still come down with the disease? So let's start with a story. There was a great rabbi by the name of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He lived from 1810 to 1883. And he was best known as the founder of the Musar movement, the modern-day leader in the field of ethics. However, he was really a great scholar in all aspects of Torah study. Interestingly, the yeshiva I attended for many years in Baltimore near Yisrael, or near Israel, is actually named after this rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So this took place in the year 1848. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was 38 years old, and it took place during the second of eight cholera epidemics that raged through Western Europe, killing millions and millions of people. And it was right before Yom Kippur, and the cholera epidemic was rampant. This second wave they were experiencing was significantly worse than the first wave, and historically it actually ended up being the worst of all eight of the epidemics that went on. And there was a big debate amongst the rabbis in Vilna at the time as to whether or not they should allow the masses to fast on Yom Kippur. Obviously, fasting weakens the immune system, makes you somewhat more susceptible to getting the disease. However, at the same time, it's Yom Kippur, the holiest day on the Jewish calendar. So there's a debate amongst the rabbis as to what you should do. And the exact details as to what happened next is slightly disputed historically. There's no first-hand report of what happened, but there are a few different second- or third-hand reports. And the gist of what seems to have happened is on Yom Kippur itself, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter got up to give the sermon in the middle of Yom Kippur, and he brought up there with him a cup of wine, and he made Kiddush in front of everyone, and he ate some cake, and he instructed everyone in the crowd to do the same as him as well. Many disagreed with his ruling. Most famously, Rabbi Bezalel Cohn, who wrote a famous book called The Reishis Bikurim, he wrote down regarding this episode as follows: "It is my obligation to make it known for all generations this great matter, that for three successive years, greater than 12,000 men and women who fasted on Yom Kippur during the cholera epidemic throughout our land, and no ill befell any of them, and this was known to virtually the entire world at the time." And he strongly disagreed with the ruling of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and many suggest this is actually what caused eventually Rabbi Yisrael Salanter left Vilna, and he went to Kovna, that this debate actually ended up eventually driving him out of Vilna. So the basic starting point question is, what exactly were they arguing about? What's the point of disagreement? Let's start from the top. The Torah says, this is in Leviticus chapter 18, verse 5. The Torah says, V'chai bahem, you should live by the mitzvot. We learn from here that the main thing Hashem wants us to do is to live. And if living comes in contention with keeping Torah, in almost all situations we should choose to live over keeping the Torah. If someone says, either eat pork or I'll kill you, say Lashon Hara or I'll kill you, you should eat the pork, say Lashon Hara, and do whatever you need to do to stay alive, with the exception of the three cardinal sins. The source for this in the Torah is this verse of V'chai Bahem, which teaches us you could break anything, even eating on Yom Kippur, in order to stay alive. Therefore, everyone would agree, both Rabbi Salanter and Rabbi Cohn, that if somebody is sick, and the doctor and the rabbi both tell them they must eat on Yom Kippur, then not only are they allowed to eat on Yom Kippur, but they're actually obligated. It's a mitzvah for them to eat on Yom Kippur. So clearly everybody would agree that people that are sick with cholera should surely eat on Yom Kippur. That wasn't debated. Everyone would also agree that if there was no threat by fasting at all, surely everyone should fast. So the dispute begins with where to draw the line. Meaning logically, it's true, people will get weaker by fasting, making them somewhat more susceptible to contracting the disease. Is that a real enough concern that we should say the principle of the V'chai Bahem, that you should live by the Torah and not die by it, to skip fasting, because perhaps people will get sick from this, or not? So to clarify this question in Jewish law, there's a famous responsa often quoted in these types of concepts of trying to define where we apply the rule of the V'chai Bahem, the principle of overriding Torah law for the sake of human life. And this is a responsa from the famous 18th century sage Rabbi Yechezkel Landau in his responsa titled The Noda B'Yehuda. The responsa is discussing the topic of autopsies, and the general outlook of the Torah is autopsies are not allowed in Jewish laws. It requires us to violate certain prohibitions. And he writes there that it would only be permissible if the need for the autopsy is what he coins bifanenu, which literally means the need for it is in front of us. The most extreme basic example of this would be you have two people sick in a hospital room and you can't figure out what's wrong with them, but you know they both have the exact same thing going on. One of them unfortunately passes away and the doctors believe that by doing an autopsy on him, you'll be able to understand the disease and save the other person. In that situation, halacha would allow for an autopsy. The Chazon Ish explains it's not limited specifically to the two hospital beds next to each other, but it means there's a real current need in front of you right now. So it would seem like one is only allowed to violate the Torah rule using the principle of V'chai Bahem for a need that is bifanenu. Just to contrast this for a second to bring out where the principle wouldn't apply, let's say, for example, you have a cancer research doctor and he's working on a certain therapy and he believes that within 10 years he'll discover a cure for cancer. But he says if he can work on Shabbos, getting an extra day into his work week, then he can get even more done. And instead of finding the cure in around 10 years, he estimates he'll be able to find the cure in around 8 years. Regarding that, we would clearly say that's not called bifanenu. Hashem wants you to rest on Shabbos and work the other days of the week. And since the need is not bifanenu, the reality of what you're accomplishing is not directly in front of us right now, that wouldn't allow you to break Torah law even for the sake of saving a life. So that's kind of the two contrasts of how we can apply or not apply the rule of bifanenu. Now, back to the case in Vilna, healthy people that through fasting will become more prone to getting sick. Is that defined as bifanenu that warrants pushing off the fast on Yom Kippur or not? So this was the gray area debated between Rabbi Salanter and Rabbi Cohn almost 200 years ago. Now, coming back to COVID, we can ask a very similar question. How do we view a person that was exposed? Is the concern of contagion and spreading the disease, especially when it could be very dangerous to certain demographics, is that strong enough to be considered bifanenu, that we can now act on it and override this person's general rights or not? So I think to answer this question, we first have to really recognize that we're actually completely asking the wrong question. We've been asking this question the whole time the way the general public would ask the question. And we need to rephrase that and rethink that and ask ourselves, how would the Torah ask such a question? What do I mean? The way the secular world presents the question is as follows. do we as a society have the right to forcibly quarantine a person, taking away the individual's rights for the betterment of society? I think that's how we would ask the question. Meaning, does the greater good of the masses override the individual's personal rights? Now listen closely, because it's a little subtle, but it ends worlds apart from the way that the Torah would look at this question. Let's start with a small little introduction here. One of the biggest contrasts between Torah principles and Western society's principles of living is as follows. The focus of American thought, both in medicine as well as life in general, is we value very strongly personal rights and freedoms. In medicine, we'll call it personal autonomy, the right to make your own decision, irrelevant of the doctor's suggestions. And in the more general sense, we have the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as written in the Declaration of Independence. And we have the Bill of Rights. We live in a world of personal rights and freedoms. However, if you look in the Torah, we don't find any mention of rights anywhere in the Torah. There's no such thing in Torah. The Torah creates a world of obligations, no rights. Let's see how this plays out. Take, for example, education. In America, every child has the right to an education. The Torah, in contrast to that, says, "Vishinantem levonecha." Every parent has an obligation to teach their child. In America, you have a right to health care. In the Torah, it says, "Lo sta'amor al dam reyecha," or "V'hashevosa lo." There's an obligation to make sure that people's health are taken care of. Or in secular law, I have the right to protect myself, my property, my family. In Jewish law, there's no such right. Everyone else has the obligation to make sure that they don't damage you or damage your property. Now you might ask, what's the big difference? In the end of the day, we're getting to the same point. The children are getting educated, the sick are getting healed, and nobody's coming into my property. But there's a huge difference in focus. What are you spending your time thinking about? Are you concerned about yourself, getting what you need, getting what you deserve, getting what you're entitled to? Or are you concerned about everyone else? Making sure all the poor people are fed, making sure all the poor people have money, making sure that all the children are educated, making sure the sick are taken care of. The Torah demands of us to become a society of givers. While often what ends up happening in Western civilization, when we're focused on our personal rights, it creates a society of takers. Now with this in mind, how would a Torah scholar phrase the ethical question of quarantine? I think it would look something a little bit more as follows. Does someone who was exposed to COVID-19 have the obligation towards society to quarantine? So it's really more of an internal question. Do you have the obligation to quarantine? Not can we as a society remove your rights, but what's my obligation towards the larger world? Now let's say you do have an obligation and you're ignoring it and you're going out anyways. We still have that question, can we quote unquote force you to quarantine? But the way we would phrase that question is not, can we make you quarantine and remove your rights? Rather, listen to how this question is asked. The question would be, can we force you to fulfill the obligation that you're supposed to be doing? Meaning, if you do have to quarantine, that would be your personal obligation. And the question is, as a society, can we impose on people and force them to keep the obligations that they're supposed to be doing themselves if they're not doing it? A very different question, a very different perspective than the way we asked the question initially. So to answer this question, there's a fascinating response by another great sage, Rabbi Chaim Falaji, with a very similar case. The following is the case that happened to him. It was during one of the epidemics in his youth, he says in the early 1800s, and he titles the epidemic with the Hebrew acronym of Beis Ayin. I don't know exactly what that's referring to. If anybody knows, feel free to let me know. And there was a Jewish doctor who was taking care of many patients that had this disease. And the doctor was asymptomatic, and the doctor wanted to come to Shul and pray with all the other men. He wanted to be part of the minyan. And all the congregants were very scared of being near him because he was taking care of these ill patients all day long. And they were saying, we don't want you to come to Shul because you're going to get sick and you're going to be contagious. And he was saying back, what do you mean? It's my obligation. I have to go pray. And I'm asymptomatic, so there's nothing wrong with me right now. So I should come to Shul. And they couldn't resolve this dispute, so they sent a letter to the great sage Rabbi Chaim Falaji. And he responded as follows. He said that it is the obligation of the doctor to take the necessary precautions to keep the congregation safe. And if it was deemed unhealthy for him to be around, he shouldn't pray with the minyan. And he sourced this from a very interesting inference in a Tosfos, in a passage of the Talmud in Tractate Baba Kama, page 23a. The Gemara there discusses the following case. Imagine if someone, we'll call him Frank, bakes a cake in his house and he has this cake on a layer of coals that it's cooking on. Now, John has a dog, and John's dog gets loose and jumps into Frank's house. He grabs the cake right off the coals. He runs outside with it. He eats the cake, and he drops the remains of it, which still had some of these coals stuck in it, on somebody's lawn, thereby lighting the lawn on fire and causing a great damage. So the Gemara rules as follows. Regarding the cake, because the dog ate the cake, John, who owns the dog, has to pay Frank for the full value of the cake. Regarding the field that was burnt down, the Talmud explains that John, again, the owner of the dog, has to pay the field owner half damages, while Frank, since he watched his coals properly, he's completely exempt. The Gemara then discusses that maybe really Frank, who owned the coals that eventually lit the field on fire, should be obligated to pay for the other half of the field, and the Gemara explains why he's not obligated to pay for the other half of the field. Now, Tosfos makes a fascinating inference from this discussion in the Gemara. He says as follows, it's a little tricky, I'll try to be as clear as possible. We already know that John has to pay Frank for the cake, which means that it's clearly John's fault for not watching his dog and not Frank's fault that the dog got the cake. Meaning, let's say Frank left his cake in the middle of the public thoroughfare and a dog comes and eats the cake. That's Frank's fault. He was negligent in guarding his cake. But we see from the fact that John pays Frank for the cake that Frank guarded his cake properly, and it's John's fault that the dog got to the cake. Yet at the same time, we're considering that Frank, who we just said did nothing wrong, he properly guarded his cake, still the Gemara considers that perhaps he has to pay for the damages that came out from the coal that was attached to his cake. So Tosfos says, we see an amazing principle here. One has to be more careful to not damage others, even more than he is careful to safeguard himself from getting damaged. Meaning Frank did a good enough job watching to make sure that he himself won't get damaged, and therefore John is obligated to pay him for the damage he did. Yet at the same time, it could be that's not good enough. You need an even higher level of watching to make sure that you don't damage somebody else. So Rav Chaim Falaji rules from here that the doctor should stay home and not go to shul, since even though it's a risk he's comfortable taking, he has to be more cautious regarding damaging others, even more than the amount he's careful for himself. So seemingly, the Torah law in our application as well would be that if you've been exposed to COVID-19 and the medical professionals are requiring you to quarantine, as there's a potential danger towards society, even if you yourself would be comfortable accepting that level of risk, even if you would say, I don't mind if somebody who's quarantining comes over and talks to me, I'm willing to accept that risk upon myself, still the Torah would tell you, you have to remain in quarantine. And even if it means you can't pray with a minyan or do other group mitzvahs, the principle we glean from the words of Tosfos is that we have to be more cautious regarding damaging other people, even more than the amount of caution we take towards safeguarding ourselves. I hope you enjoyed this expanded episode of the Thinking Jew podcast. It's a really interesting topic, this idea of quarantine and halacha. I would love, if you have any questions, any feedback, or you disagree, feel free to shoot me an email. As always, you can reach me at thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com. Hope you have an amazing day.